Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on 101.9 High FM Radio. And on the Finding Human program, my guest today is Mari Sukkers, and our topic is The Power of One. Before I go on to tell you a bit more about Mari, I would like to dedicate today's program to Mrs. Magdalene Rex, a mother who taught her children about caring for others, respect for self, self-worth, and against huge obstacles herself, she raised children who care about the world. Now, Magdalene Rex raised a daughter with the courage to stand for her principles and to fight against injustice. Who am I talking about? I'm talking about Mrs. Mari Sukkers, and someone I would be very proud to call my daughter. Welcome, Mari.
Good morning, Sue. Good morning to your listeners. It is my privilege, and I think my mom would be so proud to hear her name mentioned on the airwaves in South Africa and beyond.
I should hope so, because, you know, just tell our listeners a little bit about her, just a bit about how old she was and what happened to her.
Yeah, my mom died at the age of 74. She lived a very, very long life, but she had a hard life. She was, I mentioned on this program, she was, and it was actually the first time that I said it in public, that she was sold to my father at the age of 12. And, but she was unique in that she had a very strong moral compass, right and wrong, you know. She demanded that from you, and she demanded that we not be fearful of people, most of all. And she demonstrated it in the way that she reacted to adversity, to oppression, and where there was in the old apartheid system, a requirement to be docile. My mother did the opposite, you know. She spoke her mind. She said what her opinion, she said it even if it would be to a disadvantage. So, and she raised us that way, you know, with those values of being fearless, speak your mind, stand up for yourself.
And you know, Mari, I had to laugh at one of the things you put on Facebook. It was about losing your wallet and how you said that they were, the people who found it were raised by good mothers. Please just tell everyone that story. I love it. Did you hear me?
I couldn't hear you. I'm trying to see if I can change the change to a different network, because I just lost you for a
Now, can you hear me now? You've just gone off the network.
Side.
Okay, now can you hear me? No?
Something that I wrote on Facebook?
Yeah, you wrote about losing your wallet and
yes,
how they were raised by good mothers.
Yes. Yeah, I had the experience that it's quite, everybody knows, especially for women, our wallets carry everything in it, you know. And in my wallet that day, I had both my passport, my ID, my driver's license. I had all of it in the wallet because I came from travel the week before and left everything in the wallet. So I had one of those, I have one of these big wallets, you know. And because I'm quite a scatterbrain, I normally put everything in one thing when I'm traveling, because I have a tendency to misplace something and forget where I put it. So on the day that I went shopping here in Helderberg, I had everything in it. And We had a very good day because we took our daughters with us, my son and my husband and two daughters. We had a really good day. My daughter, since she's little, loves going out with us. She calls it big shopping when she was little, and sometimes we still tease her on that. She's now 16 years old. But so it was quite a nice day, you know. I think many people can relate to that. Just a day of ice cream, you buy the shopping, everybody's having, you know, just time together. But what I didn't know was that I lost my wallet, and we only discovered it in the evening at about 8 o'clock, I think. I discovered I was looking for something and I couldn't find my wallet. You know that cold feeling of I've just lost my bank cards, my credit card, my everything. I mean, if anybody wanted to do identity theft on me, they had literally everything that they could do to change things, you know. But I saw on my phone, as we were frantically looking, and my husband being irritated by now, because you've misplaced it somewhere. Just think back to where you've put it. Sit still and think where you've put it. I saw I had a few missed calls. And when I returned the calls, one of the calls was from a young man from Mr. Price, Brendan. And he told me that he picked it up. But you know where he picked it up? In a trolley outside. And he had no reason to give it back, you know. And I had every reason to believe it's lost. But, you know, his first words to me were so kind. He said, "I was concerned that you may be worried about where you've left your wallet."
Oh, wow.
And I just wanted to let you know that we found it, you know. And he said to me, and I saw that you're a little bit of a famous person, he said. So I thought you would be very concerned that you've lost your wallet. I was so taken, Sue, because, you know, sometimes we think this country is only made up of the Mhlanga Commission characters and the ad hoc committee characters. We think that the people on the wrong side of the law defines this nation, and actually it does not. There are millions of people doing the right thing.
Absolutely, and I think that's what we have to remember. And also, you said at the bottom of that, you said, well, they were brought up by very good mothers.
I always say that, you know, there's that old saying, but also because of my own experience with my mom, that the hand that rocks the cradle, it goes, rocks the nation, right? Mm. And with my mom, I had the experience that out of all the people on the farm, and we grew up in hard circumstances, she certainly went through hard circumstances.
And apartheid, you know? South Africa.
Yes. And deep, I wouldn't say we experience deep poverty as you would now in the Free State, because deep poverty is where people do not go with food for days. We certainly had generational poverty, but a poverty that has more to do with not having money, not having your own home, not, you know.
And can we get back to that in a minute?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Mari Sukers. And if you'd like to contact us or send any questions in for Mari, please do so on 061-895-1019. Now, Mari, you were talking about your mom, and you were saying that the way she was brought up, first of all, in very bad circumstances, very right in the middle of the apartheid's worst time, and yet she still held on to her values. What would you put that down to when you were talking just now about her?
I always think about it. I cannot. My mother had a very strong north, as we would say, and I cannot tell you really what had the most impact on her life in terms of the formation of her values, because she was kidnapped when she was 12 years old. So she was still very young. But I know that Christianity and you know, the biblical values or the biblical stories, rather, had a massive impact on me as a child. And my mother taught me to pray from a very young age. So God played a role in her life. I said last time, she was a bit of a maverick. She didn't go, you know, she was a free spirit. So she didn't, organized religion was not, and I'm laughing because it's what endeared her to me now the most, yeah. Is that she was not what you would call religious. And she absolutely had a hatred of hypocrisy, especially. But I would say that I think her strong value system was really born out of Christianity and her understanding of God. She does, when my sister did a historical analysis, or she looked at our history, from my mom's side, and apparently my mom comes from very strong missionaries that used to live in the Southern Cape. So I think this most probably laid the foundation for that strong moral core, you know.
Yeah. And on that note, we can actually go on to you, because you were you're a former member of parliament for the African Christian Democratic Party. And now you're the founder of Voice to Parliament. If anyone would like to listen to our previous podcasts, please look it up under Finding Human on Chai FM. And you'll see it's October 2024 and January 2025. But Mari, before we go on to the Voice to Parliament, which you have founded, I would like to pay tribute to a man, your husband. Yeah. We were supposed to be on air last week, and you sent a message to say, my husband's being sworn in. I couldn't understand what the swearing in was about. So I sent it to you, and I said, what's he being sworn in for? And he was being sworn in as a counsellor for Kimberley. So tell me a bit about your husband. How did he come to be in that position?
I think I need to walk it a little bit back. He grew up in a working class family, but his father was a pastor. So when he was born in a family that was very devoted to community for all of his life. So that is his core foundation. And throughout our marriage, we've worked within community, you know. So for the last 7 years, he assisted the ACDP on various projects. During the COVID period, he was the brains behind the Joseph Storehouse, which was giving out food to various communities. I think they served about 15,000 food parcels in that time, you know, to various people that were vulnerable. And he's been working in the background, really. He was the person who set up the ACDP operational structures, you know, that it functions from. And 3 years ago, we were asked or mandated by the organization to go to the Northern Cape. Many of your listeners may not know this, but the Northern Cape, together with the Eastern Cape, not as bad as the Eastern Cape, but it certainly falls in the same level in terms of poverty and unemployment, very high unemployment. So a very hard province to work in. But we were responsible for the Northern Cape, and one of the projects that he founded was the leadership program that he does under an NGO that he started. So we've worked in the Kimberley area for 2 years straight. And then the ACDP lost the councillor that we, you know, had in the municipality.
Just let's tell our listeners what the ACDP is. It's the
It is the African Christian Democratic Party. It currently has three members in parliament, and lost one member, so didn't perform very well in the last election. And one of the challenges the organization, of course, has is to have the right kind of capable leaders to serve in, not only in its structures on the ground, like Jonathan had done for the last couple of years, but also to have competent people within municipalities to represent the organization. In Kimberley, unfortunately, they just have one seat. And so the organization did ask him to go and represent it in council and at the same time find a program so that the ability of the organization can, you know, be expanded. We've had a terrible election result, and the need is there for the organization to do itself. And I really trust and wish he, and I know he's one of the most capable people, really, to bring the real kind of politics, the politics that has to do with human beings and with people at the center, to bring that to bear as an office bearer. Yeah.
Well, well done, Jonathan. And just now, Mari and I couldn't hear each other, so he came to help us, but he told us that women are not very good on these sort of things.
You know, he still got some work. I still have some work to do on him, you see.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Mari, Elie Wiesel, the Holocaust survivor and Nobel Peace Prize winner, said mankind must remember that peace is not God's gift to his creatures. Peace is our gift to each other. Now, you have started your new organization. And tell me why you have started it, what it's called, and what you feel the need is in our country for this party.
So with after the election, I shouldn't say after the election, I think by the Saturday of the election results rolling in, it became very clear, you know, that we did poorly, and that we are going to move into a decrease. And in those moments, I made a decision that I want to continue to do the work that I've done within Parliament, the communities that are very close to my heart, and the principles and vision that I have in terms of South Africa and the continent, that I would like to pursue those. And Voice to Parliament for me, you know, was born that Saturday, really. Mm-hmm. And it is about representing the voices of communities that are very close to my heart in the deep rural places of our country, like the Northern Cape, the Karoo, but also to represent the voices of communities that by the Constitution, every single political party has to remember who it is that they serve. Absolutely. So when political parties, for instance, allow the malignment of Jewish people in the Sea Point area, or Christian pastors that are not allowed to stand or express their support for a particular organization or a country like Israel, that political parties then fail in their duty. And for me, Voice to Parliament is about strengthening the oversight as an external body to Parliament, meaning call representatives to accountability. When South Africans look at the last couple of weeks of the Mhlanga Commission, the ad hoc committee, you literally see the need for strengthening oversight. We have various mechanisms in our democracy by which we hold the executive and we protect the rights, by which we hold the executive accountable and by which we protect the rights of citizens. That only happens when we are using those mechanisms, whether through lobbying, lobbying those institutions to protect the rights of South Africans, all South Africans, not only some. And with Voice to Parliament, it's important for me that I participate in strengthening oversight, in representing the voices of the communities that I care deeply about. It is the people of the Karoo, it is the Jewish community that I'm close to, it is the Christian community and parents that has entrusted me with their vote during the Sixth administration to fight for education and freedom in education. I want to continue that work with Voice to Parliament.
That's a big task, but I really admire you for that. You're actually, there you are back again. You know, you said that you'd taken a beautiful sabbatical in the beautiful Karoo, should I say. And you couldn't believe how a year had passed so quickly. But you said it's time to return to the mission of building an army. And you said we are at least a year away from our local government elections. I hope all my listeners and our listeners today realize that their voice, their vote is so, so needed. You go on to say our nation is at a vital crossroads, a moment that will define the future our children inherit. Although I'm not public in office, I fully intend to use my voice to advocate, promote and fight for the future. And then you go on to say, please look out for announcements. I founded the organization Voice to Parliament as a platform to advocate, promote and fight for Christian democratic principles in policy and legislation. Now, what really fascinated me, and I really enjoyed reading them, were the comments people put. They said, the one, I won't mention the names in case they don't want to be mentioned, but they said, you're needed back in Parliament. So sad about those with a divisive spirit who split the Christian vote and those who vote for parties with ungodly parties. We need Christians to be salt and light in Parliament, and there's only the ACDP that has served faithfully in this role since 1994. I didn't realize it was for so long. Someone else said, welcome back, you've been deeply missed. And funny enough, a lot of these names are English names and a couple Afrikaans names, which might be from the coloured constituency, I'm not sure. But it says, the one says, may God's hand be firmly upon you. May he give you a voice to speak. And may you be as bold as a lion. Victory belongs to you. Let the fire burn deep within your heart. I mean, how wonderful are those? And this one said, Mari, I hope you saw the beautiful flower display in northern regions. Only God can do wonders like that.
Yeah.
Someone else said, awesome, well done, and welcome back. What have you got to say to those people? What is the promise? Or no, maybe we can't make a promise, but what is your greatest feeling that you need to fulfill, that it's your destiny, part of your destiny, especially now in a very divisive world?
Wow. It is I think the biggest or the strongest drive for me has always been that for people not to be forgotten. And I think my strongest drive now is for my constituency, for the people that I care deeply about, for their voices to not disappear from the halls of power. So we are having, as an example of that now, we're having in the week of the 22nd to the 25th, we are actually lobbying the different members of parliament to engage them around issues in education, particularly as it pertains to people, children in the Karoo, children in the Northern Cape. And there are, of course, other issues that are very important to our constituency that I want to advance. My greatest motivation really is to mobilize people, for people to understand the power of their voice within a democratic dispensation. Now, for that being said, Sue, the greatest threat we face is that the democratic principles in the West, the principles of freedom of expression, freedom of religion, that those are not appreciated enough, especially in our universities. When we see people having to hide who they are, not wearing their, you know, in your case, it reminds me of the apartheid years, where I read in the Netherlands that, you know, Jewish people cannot wear openly their David Cross or anything that signifies that they're Jewish because they can get hurt.
They can't go out with their yarmulkes on. There was a mother saying to her child, she can't go on to the buses. They can't go to school on the buses anymore with their head coverings, a little yarmulke, because they might be attacked.
So those things, we cannot take it lightly. We need to see it for what it is, that there is a push and a strong push for us to almost be blinded and almost become sensitized to the fact that that democratic principles are just not adhered to. And in South Africa, we face it is almost subtle when you have somebody saying that evangelicals or Christian Zionists are groups that needs to be targeted, investigated, researched. When you have the CRL Commission saying churches needs to be regulated. Those things eats at the heart of democracy. And my biggest drive is for people to understand the vote, the power of your vote doesn't end the day of election. It is throughout that administration that you have a divine right to freedom. And it is a divine right that is protected in the constitutional democracy of which you are a part of. So I think if I have to make it as basic as what drives me, it would be the values that protects the humanity of people.
And we're going to get back to that.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue, and you were listening to Rabbi Gold on A Warm Experience. My guest today is Mari Sukers, and if you'd like to contact us, please do so on 061-895-1019. Mari, a message has come through actually on my phone to say, can Mari tell us a bit about her experience in Israel?
Wow. I've been twice, as your listeners may know, to Israel. I was there in 2020, just before the elections, the South African elections, national elections. And then I went this year again. We went with a group of different members of parliament that are currently serving in the 7th administration. For every Christian, I think, being in Israel is the Bible becomes alive. You know, it has a huge impact on your faith. Israel has become very special to me, I think, because I witnessed the nation in pain when I went there after a few months after October 7th. And then throughout with the Jewish community locally, you know, the relationships that I've formed with people that are really, that loves Israel, loves the Jewish people, it gives it a different dimension. I'm not a tourist in Israel. I do not see myself as a tourist there. For me, it is a deeply spiritual experience, as well as the care and the love for the people of the Jewish people intensifies because you've been through so much, you know. The experiences that stood out for me in Israel, and it makes me want to cry, really, is how much the Jewish people value life. And I could see that in the emphasis on bringing the hostages home, the expression of love for the hostages, the stories stories of survivors, and the nation of Israel, how they embraced those survivors. And you know why it was such a deeply profound experience to see that principle alive was because in South Africa life has become cheap. In our country, we have a war that is going on in Westbury, Coronation, Guguletu, Khayelitsha, here in the Helderberg, Mitchell's Plain. These are all areas that are suffering under gang violence. And our numbers in terms of killings daily on the Cape Flats is more than the war-torn countries. So when you see us putting in the amount of effort and energy and money into a case at the ICJ and you compare that with the levels of violence here in South Africa and what are the response of our public representatives and our government, then that value of valuing every life, you know, I think that's the lesson for me as a human being to see how in Israel people love their country, people fight for the principles that are dear to them. For me, Israel is, like I say, I don't see it as a tourist. I don't see it through those eyes. I think because of my political background and because of the time that I was in Israel, it shaped me deeply. It helped me express some of the things that I could not articulate properly because I did not have the experience of it. The issue around democracy and fighting for democracy became so much more alive when I saw the experience of people being demonized because they believe something. I'm talking specifically about Christian Zionism being demonized, evangelicals being demonized, and they're being demonized because of their strong belief in the Word of God and their recognition of the Jewish people as God's chosen people. So when they say these things, I mean, if I say a man who believes he's a woman, I need to respect that, even though he defies biology. Mm-hmm. If you can respect that, but you cannot respect somebody on the basis of their beliefs, what is the difference here? Mm-hmm. The difference is the one defies biology, and you are actually asking me to rewire my brain in such a way that I need to accept a reality that's not a reality. On the other, you're saying to me that I need to defy my own beliefs because it makes you more comfortable. Mm-hmm. For me, Israel and Gaza has exposed so much of our society. It exposed the weak education system that we are party to in this country and all over the world. The fact that we do not know history. Israel for me is beyond just a spiritual, it's a lesson to the West. It's a lesson for me as a public representative. My experience in Israel was one that would enrich me and that I would cherish for life. And I think I would go to Israel every year.
Yes. That's wonderful to hear. You know, Israel is often called a white supremacist, is described as a white supremacist state country or a European settler colonial country, and that it's colonized by whites. Mm-hmm. Now, what colors did you see in Israel?
Yeah, you know, I went as a colored woman to Israel.
Are we going to get back? Okay, thanks, Craig.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue, and I'm back with Mari Sippers, and our time is going very quickly. But I was just asking Mari what she thought about labels that are put on Israel about being a white supremacist country, European settler colonials, and you were saying that you went there as a colored woman. And what did you experience?
I went there as a colored woman the first time to really understand why it is that Israel is called an apartheid state. I really thought that certainly it cannot be that this is mainlined, this concept of it being, this idea, I should say, of it being a apartheid state, white colonialism. There must be truth somewhere in this, and where is it? Because over the years, as Christians, you must know, Israel is never far. If when we pray, there's Israel in it. the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I mean, the God of Israel. It's in our prayers. Israel as a country is never far from a Christian's mind, but the physical experience of going to the country is different. You know, it brings it all to life, because there you see the Bible in technicolor, I would say. So I said, it is on the last question, that it's more than a spiritual, I saw it through a political lens. So when I went, I wanted the politics around Israel to understand that properly, why it is called, a colonial state. It is one of the most well-crafted, strategically devised lies. I think in years to come, by the grace of God, I pray, we would see it for what it is, that this is maybe one of the most best developed plans to dub this nation and demonize this nation in this way. One of the experiences in Israel, I think for many of the MPs as well, that when they're the first time, is they wanted to see where's the apartheid, because we lived through apartheid, you must understand. I mean, my mother was given a cup in the house of the person she worked for, right? A cup and her own little plate, right? You needed to come by the back door, right? If you went to the hospital, there was a separate entrance for us to come in. And I still had that experience. Mm-hmm. I think on your program, I shared how we went to the sea for the first time as farm children. And we ran into the waters, and my sister ran after us terrified, because we didn't know as kids that the sea was divided into coloreds only, blacks only, and whites only. And we were on the whites only side of the beach, and that could take you to jail and land you in a whole lot of trouble. None of those things are in apartheid. Was a system of segregation by which people's rights were denied and they were classified as second class citizens. You couldn't go into certain spaces and places because as a black or colored person defined as, and by the way, the classification of race was part of the apartheid system. You are colored. If they take a pen and they take it through your hair, you are colored. If the pen gets stuck in your head, in your hair, then you are black. None of those things are the present reality of the state of Israel. But yet the lie is being perpetuated.
It is.
So, and for many of those MPs, it was totally, quite a revelation to realize that Israel is not, there is no apartheid in Israel. It is a country that's made up and that are represented at the highest levels within parliament by, yes, it's unique. It's different in terms of the Middle East and the dynamics of the Middle East. I'm talking about the conflict itself. But in terms of calling it apartheid is a total propaganda.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, when you think about it, half of Israel's Jews are Mizrahi or Sephardi and came from Middle East and North Africa. My own son-in-law comes from Morocco. And when I met his family, you know, some of them were dark and some of them were light. You know,
yeah.
I'm sure my grandchildren will be the same, please God. Mari, it's been wonderful sharing this time with you. I'm being told to wrap up. People can get hold of you on Facebook. Please look up Mari Sukers. It's S-U-K-E-R-S. She's on LinkedIn. Are you on Instagram?
I am not as active on Instagram. They can find me on Twitter, on Twitter, Facebook, and yes.
Please do so, because you need to listen to her. And Craig saying, I must wrap up. I have enjoyed this time with you. But I need, before we end, please give Jonathan a message from me, your dear husband, Jonathan. Tell him he is absolutely correct. This old lady is hopeless with technology. While I was talking to you, I suddenly realized I hadn't turned my own speaker on full. So it was not you who I couldn't hear, it was myself. Thank you, Craig. Thank you, Mari. God bless Mari, and may you, your voice in Parliament, speak loudly, and may everyone who listens to you vote for you. We will definitely be doing this before the next elections again.
God bless you.